Welcome to the Helping Children Thrive podcast, where we talk about ways to improve your child's health and recovery. I'm your host, Momina Sidique, and I'm a certified pediatric functional medicine health coach. At Helping Children Thrive, it is our aim to educate and empower parents and practitioners with integrative approaches to children's health conditions. Along with this hope that our children can recover, I welcome you all. Hi everyone, I wanted to invite you all to a free masterclass that I am hosting on November 2nd, and it is all about how to improve your child's ADHD symptoms naturally without medication. It is the tried and true strategies that I have been adopting with my clients and has shown a lot of great results for all the people that I and the families that I have been working with. So I wanted to invite you all to come to the masterclass to listen and to learn about all of these strategies that I use. Again, it is November 2nd. It's at 12 noon Eastern time, which is 8 p.m. Gulf time, Gulf Standard time. I'm hoping to see you all there. I'm going to drop the link for signups in the show notes. So I'm looking forward to seeing you all there live. Hi, everyone. Today, we've got Stephanie Davis with us. And Stephanie's received her doctorate from Northwestern Health Sciences University. Prior to chiropractic school, she was a microbiology and biochemistry research scientist for several corporations and the University of Minnesota. She has extensive postgraduate training in functional medicine through the Institute for Functional Medicine, the Kalish Mentorship Program, the Hashimoto's Institute, and Ben Lynch's Seeking Health Educational Institute. And she's constantly in search for more tools to help her patients achieve their health goals. Having been through so much of what her patients have experienced themselves, it has helped fuel her passion and determination to do the digging to identify the root causes while empowering and educating patients with complex chronic illnesses. She loves working with both adults and children, especially families. She sees lots of mamas and their kids. Some of her areas of specialty are eczema, rashes, autoimmunity, mold, hidden infections such as EBV, which is Epstein-Barr virus, and genetics, especially for mood, ADHD, ADD, inflammation, digestive conditions like IBS, SIBO, etc. Welcome, Dr. Davis. It is so nice to have you. I'm so excited to get to speak to you. You know, you've been working with children for quite a while, so you've got a great grasp of how to help them and you know what's really going on with our children.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here because quite often when I do podcasts, we're often talking about adults and not kids, and I feel like that is an underserved area, so I'm super excited that we're doing this today.
Yeah, it really is a very small, you know, niche area. And so over here, we're talking always just about children and families and how to help parents help children. So this is really exciting to get to speak to you. How did you get into the whole area of functional medicine?
I got into functional medicine because of my own issues. I was one of those kids who had lots of allergies. As soon as I hit puberty, it was like an onslaught of horrible allergies, didn't have eczema till I was an adult, but I also ended up, I had bad hormonal issues. And then that in my early 20s transitioned into horrible migraines. And, you know, hindsight now, I know that a lot of that was histamine issues and detox related issues, but back then I didn't know. And I went to my, you know, regular doctor and he said, you know, I'm going to put you on this migraine medication. You're going to have to take it for the rest of your life. And I said, I'm 22 and I'm not broken. So I went looking for root causes and I ended up finding out about like Andrew Weil and functional medicine and started following him back in the dark ages. Before we had all of this technology. And yeah, and so that's kind of what started me off on that path. And then, you know, I started figuring things out, decided I wanted to go back to school and got my doctorate so I could practice functional medicine because I knew I didn't want to be in a lab forever. Well, I like the intellectual side of that. I very much more enjoy working with patients and, you know, seeing, you know, when a mom says to me that her kid is flourishing and has clear skin and a clear brain and is happy. And that just changes the whole family dynamic. And I understand that being a mama myself too. So that's probably one of the things that makes me the happiest and like one of the most gratifying feelings.
Yeah, it's really empowering that child for their whole future, right? It's not
Yes.
just that small unit in time. It's something that goes on for their whole life, right? Their possibilities and opportunities just open. And
Yeah.
it's so heartwarming to see that. How has your own experience and with your own struggles kind of helped you, you're a mama to two kids. So how has that helped you with your parenting journey?
Oh, I feel like, when they say that kids don't come with a manual, it's so true because a lot of it is trial by fire, right? So we learn a lot through our own experiences. And I am very much, a product of that. Like I said, I didn't have eczema until I was an adult. So that actually happened when my son was 4 months old and we had just moved. I was living in Colorado, moved to Minnesota. That was a super stressful move. And then combined, we moved into a moldy house. And that is what ended up expressing the eczema in myself. And then my son, as a baby, he didn't show it as much, but then his face, he started getting like, the rashes on the face. I always called, his cheeks his beacon, because as soon as he ate something that did not agree with him, his cheeks would start lighting up and then they would get dry. And then it would turn into the rash and eczema. And then the same with me, except for I unfortunately had eczema all over my body. It was horrible. I had a lot of the the dyshidrotic eczema, which I know can be a real challenge with little ones too, because they just want to scratch it and scratch it. So that was a huge piece of it. And so it was like a snowball effect. So I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's. We had the mold issue. There were so many little things that I actually had to address in myself and then address in my family as well. And I think we talked a little bit about my son too, how I had run the genetics and I knew just based on my husband and I that he was predisposed to things like, OCD, ADD, ADHD, all of that stuff. So I've been kind of navigating that too. When he was younger, it was super easy. He had, a perfect diet. I could give him supplements and everything was great. But probably around kindergarten, first grade, it became much more of a challenge because he saw that other kids were eating stuff and it was not in the realm of like kind of a whole foods, skewing a little paleo-ish diet. And he was like, but I want to have that candy. I want to have all this, and it has been a battle, but now that he is almost 10, he gets it. And he knows, he has seen multiple times on the correlation for him when he eats something that doesn't agree with his body. And when he, it either affects his mood or it affects his skin or his tummy, something. And so he's starting to get it now. And he does make good choices most of the time. I mean, he's human. So, sometimes I will find candy wrappers in his room and be like, what's going on here, dude? So we talk about that, right?
Yeah.
But like I said, I mean, a lot of it is being like having grace with your kids and having grace with yourself, because, I could beat myself up all day about, oh, my kid ate candy. What am I doing wrong? But I don't, because we're all human. We all have lots of external influences that, affect us and our own internal influences. And a lot of these kiddos, they have gut stuff going on that is actually driving them to want, the sugar or the gluten or the dairy or something like that. So I always remind people, I'm like, it's not so cut and dry.
It isn't, right? Especially like with the age that they're at, like you said, it's really about, and in the case of your son and so many parents who are listening, it's about empowering them, especially when they get to that age where they're able to understand a lot more and create those connections of, if I eat this, this is how I feel. And that comes with time, right? So that age when they're like 5 or 6, when they're just starting to show a lot more independence and want that independence, but don't necessarily have that understanding that's attached to it, which comes with, the experience of the next few years. How do you help parents kind of navigate that, that age between maybe say 6 and 10, where parents want to be a lot more hands-on, but the kids are also asking for a lot more independence. And I see that my son's almost 6 and And you know, there is that wanting more independence in what he eats.
I find that the age you just mentioned is one of the most challenging. My daughter is 5 years and 2 months old, and that is our battle constantly, is giving her enough, rope to give her enough independence while also trying to, somewhat protect them, right? Because we don't want to take away, we don't want to, be like a blanket and smothering them all the time, but we do, want to give them a little bit, some autonomy. And so I try to explain everything to the kids. I talk to them. I don't think it sinks in with her quite the way it sinks in with my son. Sometimes I honestly think my son is not listening because I will literally talk through all this stuff and then he'll literally move on to another a topic and be like, "Did you hear anything?" He hears because I ask him to repeat it. So it's really kind of funny, but that's something. A big piece of building rapport with your kids. If they're talking to you about any of these issues, or you're having these conversations about the supplements, about the diet, about going to bed on time, all of the things that we talk about, repeat back to them what they have said, word for word. Let them know that you are really, truly hearing them. That builds rapport with anybody, but especially with kids, because I think, especially for the generation that I grew up in, I feel like I was not heard or seen, and I think we're changing that now, but I think it's a struggle for kids when you don't feel like, I would say stuff to my parents. I feel like they were just in another world, right? And that's something that is huge. Just making sure that your kids feel heard. And I find that when I repeat back to them what they're feeling, we have better outcomes. That just sets the stage. Building the rapport with anyone is, setting the stage for a better outcome of any kind.
And I work with a lot of families with children with ADHD, and I see that this whole responsive parenting strategies really, really help without, so when even before you do a lot of changes with their child, whether it's their diet and things like that, just their response to various situations, when you just kind of alter that, makes it so much easier to kind of get in through a lot of these walls these children tend to, build up, or just the anxiety that's around them on a on practically like a daily basis,
Oh, for
right?
sure.
And so it this kind of a responsive parenting really kind of helps get to them and feel supported and feel that, you're on our team rather than not on our
Right.
team.
Yeah, I usually have parents do stuff like this before we even do anything else. We work on this type of stuff, like being intentional with everything you do. Like when I give my kids a hug, like oftentimes their head is kind of at my chest, which is, your heart center, right? And I focus on, just giving them love. And I feel like when you hug somebody with intention, especially your kids, but anybody, it's definitely more meaningful than, just giving somebody a quick hug and saying, "I love you," right? So doing all of those little things really, really matter. And like we said before, kind of set the stage for doing other changes that might be a little more difficult to tackle, like diet or going to bed on time or, just taking supplements, all of that stuff.
And a big piece of healing just kind of centers around our kids' nervous system. And this is with
Yes.
that, it ties into that, right? It's really
Yes.
getting their nervous system, giving it some kind of regulation, right? Giving their heart, their just basic, just being, just giving that stress, just reducing that, pushing it away, and helping them with that, right? And
Yeah.
I think that helps so much.
I know. It's funny because, in functional medicine, we always talk about the gut being the second brain. And I agree with that because it has its own nervous system, but our hearts also have our own nervous system, which is exactly why I tell people to do, focus on that. Actually, whenever I see patients, that's how we start off. We do a heart centering exercise. I've done a lot of, I mean, you said some of the training that I've done at the beginning. I've done tons of training. I've done training with HeartMath. I've done, actually this year I completed a trauma certification because I feel like that is the missing piece of the puzzle. So when I'm working with patients, I mean, we're working on everything because, you know, in integrative and functional medicine, I think we've become in the last 5 years a lot more aware of that connection, you know, the emotions, the trauma, the nervous system. We talk about it a lot, but not a lot of practitioners have a lot of tools to deal with it. And truthfully, some of them don't want to. But I felt frustrated as a clinician trying to, you know, send people off. Oh, try CBT, try EMDR, try talk therapy, you know, all of those, because you never know what's going to work for somebody. Mm-hmm. And I ended up doing the specific one that I did. I chose because I went through it myself and I found it so valuable. And I do it with my kids. There's different levels of what we do. And there's a lot of stuff that I do with my kids, you know, when they are having like an emotional issue, I can snap them right out of it. It's amazing. Some of the stuff that, you know, you can do when you just focus on, you know, the emotions, the nervous system, all of that, yeah. You know, you can supersede a lot of, you know, and I will also say this, with the kids that I do this with in practice, we have to do less of the harder interventions. We have to do less, you know, diet change or any supplements and all that stuff. And our treatment actually occurs faster than the people who don't do that type of stuff. So it really, you hit the nail on the head when you said, you know, when focusing on the nervous system and regulation, and that is a key piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. It also makes them a lot more, just doing that kind of work with them makes them a lot more amenable to doing a lot of those changes that we're talking about. So whether it's diet or if it's lifestyle, they're more willing, more open to make those changes, right? Because a lot of that stress that's surrounding their behavior is kind of pushed away. A lot of the anxiety has settled.
Yeah. And I also find that the work that I did on myself definitely translated to the kids. It was really fascinating because I did a lot of sessions. I think I went through 16 sessions, and it was fascinating to watch my change, but also watch the kids and even my dog, because, you know, we were talking about the, you know, the heart's nervous system. We essentially give off a field, an electromagnetic field around us that's about 8 feet wide. And when people come into that, they feel what you're putting out on an energetic level. And so my dog was calmer. My kids were calmer. It was amazing and fascinating to see. It's kind of like a real life experiment, right? But it's kind of cool. And it's amazing to me to watch that transition when I work with moms and their kids to, you know, to going through all this. And they're like, it's like what, night and day, I have different kids. And that's, you know, such an amazing thing to experience.
Yeah, it's really cool that you mentioned that, because I'd read somewhere that the connection between a mom and a child doesn't just break at the time of birth when the child comes earthside. That connection remains for, I don't know if I'm right, but maybe 6 years.
Longer than that.
Oh, maybe it's even longer than that.
It can be up to 18 years.
Well, there you go. So the number I read was like, you know, the impact that a mom has on a child's emotion, but it's both ways. It's not just one way. And that's what's so cool about it, is that when a child is under stress, the mom is under stress as well. But if the mom is, you know, starts working on herself, as like a lot of parents say, where can I start? What can I do? You know, my child's just, it's so hard to get to them. Like you said, the first thing is work on yourself and try to kind of get those pathways going, get that energy flow in the house. Once they're, and once you start transmitting that sense of calm, your child will be more responsive.
Yeah, I know. It's this, that whole, you know, kind of aspect is another topic, but it is so cool. I just read a study the other day where they found you've got fetal maternal circulation, you know, it drives itself, you know, when you're pregnant to prevent you from, you know, getting rid of the pregnancy. But those cells stay in the mom. They said that's where kind of that 18 years comes in, because they have done studies where they have seen in the brains of mothers, the fetal cells 18 years later. And I'm like, and it's funny because sometimes my husband gives me, not that he's giving me a hard time about it, but he's funny about it because like I literally I still my 5-year-old still sleeps with us. My 9-year-old slept with us until he was like almost 3. But my 5-year-old for some reason doesn't want to leave. We talk about it a lot, but she doesn't want to leave. And my husband is like, he's like, I just don't get it. And I'm like, I don't think a male who hasn't had a child quite gets it, because we still, there's a little bit different connection. And I talked to him about this and he's like, yeah, I guess I get that. But you know,
yeah, it's so special.
Yes,
yeah,
it is.
What moms have, yeah. No, I totally get that. And like the research you're talking about is what I saw too, but where it's also talking about how much healing a baby gives to the mom as well in the mom's body. So it's just, it's so,
so cool.
It
right.
is. And just kind of getting to that and talking about, we talked about that before hopping on, was just the impact that a mom and her health has on her child, right? Like we're talking about how you've been working for more than a decade, right, with children. You've seen this progression in the health of children just change over time. And 10 years is a lot. And we've seen in that 10 years, our kids are getting sicker. And so the impact of mom's health and mom's microbiome has such a big impact on the outcome of that child, and not just in that delivery in the first year of life, but basically, you know, for their whole life, if you don't really do a lot of interventions to make those changes where the child needs them. So how are you seeing that?
Yeah, so I think what you were talking about before is when we were talking about before we hopped on, I started practicing 16 years ago and I did not see a lot of kids. And then there was definitely an uptick in the number of kids I started seeing probably 10, 11 years ago. And it was interesting to me because they were coming with tummy issues, skin issues, you know, a lot of what I see today, but it wasn't even back then, it still wasn't even quite as prevalent as it is now. And, you know, we talk so much about that, you know, like you said, the mom getting to her best place before she gets pregnant is key, you know, making sure you've repleted all of those nutrients, especially if you've had previous pregnancies, because you could have the most perfect diet and take all of the nutrients and still be depleted, especially after nursing. You know, being pregnant is one thing, nursing is much more depleting, especially the longer you do it. And I remember I was shocked because I, with my daughter, I was testing myself every 6 months because I nursed her for, I only nursed her for a year. I nursed my son for 2.5 years. And I was so depleted, even though I was taking tons and tons and tons of those nutrients, because you're giving that to the baby. You know, my omega-3 fatty acids were low. Magnesium was low. Vitamin D was lower than it usually was for me. So it was very, it was interesting to actually watch that, even though I was eating the right stuff. I was even taking digestive enzymes to help absorb more. And it still ended up, I was not in major deficits, but I was still low. I was still low on the lab levels.
Yeah.
And so it is, it's really, that is one thing I always tell moms, get your hormones in check, get your nutrients in check, make sure your gut is in check too. All of those things will combine for you having a better pregnancy and also decreasing the risk of postpartum depression and Hashimoto's after the fact, all of the things that can happen to mama after she gives birth, but also setting the stage for you having a healthier baby. Now, I will also say there are moms who do that and still have kids who have issues, you know, whether it be eczema or allergies or food related sensitivities after the baby is born. Sometimes, you know, you can do all the right things and, you know, stuff still happens. But I would say by and large, it does tend to set the stage for better outcomes for the baby, because I do, like I said, I see a lot of families, I see a lot of mamas and their kids. And the moms who came to me, you know, with their oldest child that had eczema, we have been able to prevent it most of the time in the subsequent pregnancies when the mom has worked on herself and also done some different things after the baby is born.
Yeah. And I think one more thing just to add to that is, you know, a lot of these mamas, even if they're doing the best that they can and you know, their levels are good, we can't always control the external environment that we might be in. Like you had said, right, when you had traveled, that there was mold, right? And those are sometimes those are factors that we can't control. And even if the exposure is for short periods of time, everyone's body is different. And then you'll have reactions to those things in your body, and then your kids will also, if they're in that same environment, will react to that as well.
Yeah, that's another big one. And I kind of experienced that one myself, because we were talking about moving into that moldy house. And we didn't know that until kind of well after we moved in, because the previous owner did a really good job of hiding it. And then all of a sudden we thought we just had a little bit of mildew, and it ended up being everywhere. It was literally everywhere. It was horrific. My son, you know, newborn baby was brought into that. He ended up, you know, having some issues because of that. But I ended up getting pregnant with my daughter right after we moved out of there. And so I was pregnant with her having been exposed to that stuff. So she was exposed to mycotoxins, and she was exposed to candida and all sorts of other things. And I would also say I had two miscarriages in between the two of them. And it was because directly related to that. The stress, you know, the mold and all that, it really depleted my hormones. And I was so confused. I was like, what is going on here? But then all of, you know, the big picture came into focus really fast when we realized that there was the mold and, you know, all of the other issues, and my hormones were just tanked after that. I mean, I literally had no progesterone. And that was one of the reasons I lost the two pregnancies, was because I could not keep, you know, pregnancy viable through the first trimester. And I ended up with my daughter. I took like 200 milligrams of oral progesterone for not just 16 weeks, but 20 weeks, because I was so paranoid at that point. You know, I think you also have, you know, the trauma of those miscarriages, right? And at that point, I had done some trauma work. I'd done a fair amount. And I thought it was definitely in a better place. But it's still, it was night and day difference between my daughter's pregnancy and my son's pregnancy, because of the fact that I felt like I was always looking over my shoulder. Yeah. You know, it's like, it's something that is, you know, like we said, those cells, even though it wasn't a completely viable pregnancy, those cells are still floating around in you, right? So,
yeah,
you know, there's still that kind of, that echo is still there. And so I definitely had to deal with that too.
Yeah, no, I think that that's just so powerful to share, because I think a lot of parents can connect with that, because when you talk about this whole picture, right, and putting all of those puzzles together, that kind of is very reflective of how we help children as well, right? And that's something you and I have in common, is that we kind of look at this whole picture. We don't look at piecemeal. We don't look at just what their diagnosis might be, whether it's ADHD, whether it's eczema, whether it's allergies or asthma, whatever it is. It's that there's so many pieces behind that you need to use. And you've spoken so much about the gut, right? And how the gut has been central. And it really is. How have you been seeing that? How have you been seeing that deterioration of the gut of children?
Yeah, and so that's super interesting and a great question, because what I have seen over time. So we basically, one of the standards that whenever we have a child in the practice, we always run a stool test. So, you know, like a comprehensive stool test, a functional test, not just, you know, what your doctor's going to run, because it's not the same. So that's always the first one. A lot of times there are other tests that we have to combine with that. But what I've watched over time is the deterioration of the beneficial flora. So all of those keystone species that, you know, kind of really promote gut health and brain health, and really actually do a lot of the signaling for that gut brain axis. I've seen those species diminish. Like, you'll end up with basically imbalances, either really, really high levels or really, really low levels of like Bifidobacterium and Escherichia, you know, E. coli. You'll have low levels of Akkermansia, which produces a lot of short chain fatty acids, and Clostridia, and, you know, Bacteroides, actually all of those guys. really, you know, you want to have them and you want to have them in balance. You don't want them. And I've also seen a significant rise of the opportunistic ones that can technically sometimes become pathogenic. So, you know, stuff in the realm of Prevotella, Citrobacter, Klebsiella, even staph and strep, like those are most commonly the ones that I see. And that's just the bacteria. Almost all of these kiddos have candida, and some of them have it horribly. And that's something I'm seeing, that just watching, you know, the results of these tests change over time. I almost can predict what I'm going to see on a lab based on what I'm seeing with a kid, with the gut. Every once in a while, I'm surprised, but that's few and far between anymore. It's really interesting. And like I said, I see a lot of the moms too, and I'll see siblings. Lots of times the trend runs in the family. It's not just one. And that makes a lot of sense, you know, based on, you know, the biome, especially with a vaginal birth, you know, passing through mom's biome, but then just like the intimate, you know, kind of connection that we have. We tend to hug and love on our kids a lot. So there's a lot of trends for them.
Yeah.
So it's really, it's interesting to see. There's a lot of similarities that run in families, but that's a huge piece of it. And then just, you know, the environmental toxins and how those are influencing the microbiome. I think that that's probably the biggest piece of the puzzle right there, is there's so many chemicals in the environment everywhere, you know, in the air, the water, the soil, there, I mean, the objects in your house, basically. You can't get away. So I used to tell people when I first started practicing, I'd be like, oh yeah, if you do kind of like a quarterly cleanse, you'll be fine. Not like a cleanse, but a specific detoxification, like clean up your diet for a week. You know, some people do it for a month, but clean up your diet for a week, take certain supplements for a week, just kind of give your liver a break, right? Your liver, kidneys, gut. Now I've changed my tune on that, because we have to. It's something you actually have to be mindful and aware of on a daily basis now. So that's part of what I walk through with parents too, is like cleaner, you know, healthier, more natural cleaning products and personal care products, and having, you know, what kind of, you know, just filters to use in your HVAC or your AC unit, you know. Air filters, air filtration. We use air filtration in all of, like, basically every room in our house. If we, you know, if you don't have one, you know, water filtration, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Just trying to minimize the impact, you know, eating cleaner when you can, because I know for a lot of people, not everybody has access to being able to do all of these things, especially at once. And that's something else I tell parents, is it's a journey. It's not like I suddenly did this all overnight. This has been years in the making. And as I learn new things, we implement new things. And so I tell parents, you know, based on my experience and what I see for you, these are the things we should be doing first. You know, if you want to do the other things later on, great. But, you know, this is what we need to do first, because there are definitely things that are going to make an impact faster. And so that's something I go back to the grace. To give yourself grace, you don't have to do it all overnight. It is, we've all been on a journey, and it's not something that is going to happen overnight.
Yeah. And especially since a lot of families are coming to you with their children, and right, and they want to see the biggest, you know, bang for their buck. And because they want their kids to feel better tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that is really what the competition with conventional medicine is, right? Because they have a pill that makes it better instantly. For the short period, or really, really short period, right?
Maybe, sometimes, right?
Right? And so that is what we're up against. And that's hard, right? For parents to really come to this whole idea of, this is a process, this is a journey, this will take time, but the results are longer lasting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where all of that kind of ties in.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I always tell the parents. It's like, we're literally setting the stage for health, like long-term health and vitality. And I'm like, isn't that what we all want? You know, we want to live a long, healthy life with not a lot of issues, you know? So that's something that I talk to parents about a lot, you know. Well, like whenever I do a treatment plan, we always, like I said, there's certain things that we do at the beginning. A lot of it is like just easy stuff, like emotional work, you know, setting the stage for what we're going to do treatment wise. But I always do it You know, we kind of do a stepwise process. I never throw the kitchen sink at anyone at first because I don't want, I don't want somebody's body to get overwhelmed. I don't want their mind to be overwhelmed. I don't want the parents to be overwhelmed. You know, there's so many pieces of the puzzle there. You know, it's and that is something. It literally is setting the foundation, especially the lifestyle stuff. I always tell my even especially my adult patients, because I feel like kids inherently do some of these things, you know, because their bodies, they're still in sync with their bodies.
Yeah.
A lot of adults have become disconnected to, you know, from their bodies, especially moms, unfortunately, because I feel like they're giving so much of themselves to other people that they don't prioritize themselves. And so sometimes when I ask them, I'm like, are you feeling X, Y, or Z? Are you observing this? And they're like, I don't know, because they are so focused on their kids and their family and everything else that they forget about themselves. So that's something else we actually work a lot about, you know, the moms, like really, you know, you're important too. I would say it's actually more important to get you well, because you are kind of the, you know, the linchpin and the keystone in your family. You know, I know
I, of course.
Yes, I've got kids. I work. I do all, you know, I make dinner. I'm the one who shuttles the kids to like different practices. I mean, there's a lot on our plates, and it's easy to say, well, I'm not going to work out today. I'm not going to do myself, you know, self-care, self-work today. But I find I struggle a lot when I don't do that. And I always try to tell mamas, I'm like, you prioritize it. And if you're having a hard time prioritizing, I have a couple of health coaches that I work with, and I refer my, you know, mamas to them to help, you know, make them, you know, establish that habit and make it a priority.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's just about creating that environment at home. And that's what I always tell a lot of the families that I work with, is the biggest impact that I see is when the whole family goes in on it together, rather than making changes in silos for different children. So if there's one child with food allergies, or, you know, where you're focusing on your food, they're the only one on the dinner table who's eating a specialized meal, and everybody else is kind of eating whatever they used to eat before. It just doesn't work. It adds so much more stress and anxiety on that dinner table, and it kind of continues into every other aspect of your family life. But the change when you do it all together is just completely different.
Absolutely. Yeah. I work with a family that has 8 kids, and I see 7 of the 8 kids and the mom.
Oh, wow.
And that is one of the things that we really talk about, because it's so hard for them to just like focus on, you know, one kid's diet. So typically when we do a diet change, we do it for everybody. And that family happens to have celiac and Hashimoto's there. So it's pretty easy to say, hey, we're not doing gluten, we're not doing dairy. There are certain things that we're, you know, staying away from. But that's exactly what we have to do, because it's much more feasible to do it for the whole family. The funny thing is, most of the times it's the dads who have the biggest issue. They're like, why are we changing our diet?
And then they're the ones, though, when they start feeling better, they're like, wow, what happened?
Exactly. Oh, it's so funny. Yes, I see that happen a lot, too.
Yeah, no, it's really one of the things we talked about before we got on was just this overwhelm that sometimes parents feel with, you know, this long list of things that we've just kind of been talking about that they need to do. For example, if it's supplements, or if it's food, if it's diet, things like that. How do you help parents reduce that overwhelm? You did say you talk about, you know, more stepwise approach, but how can they make these, say, food changes? How can they make it easier to take supplements? It's so hard to take pills for a lot of kids and things like that.
Yeah.
So how do we make those things work for them?
Like I said before, having done this for so long, I've learned a lot of things over time. So, you know, first of all, food changes, we don't do a lot of things at once. So, gluten and dairy free is pretty easy to do, but I often don't have people do a lot unless the kid really, really, really needs to. Like eggs or nuts and everything else on top of that. We usually do it like, you know, a couple at a time rather than all at once. Just to make it more feasible and doable for the family. supplement wise and treatment wise. So I use, like, especially with my the babies that I see, babies and toddlers, lots of liquids, powders, there's creams, there are lots of topicals that we use, there are patches that we can use, there are homeopathics. I use all of that stuff. There's even, there's all sorts of other stuff that I use. But yeah, I can very much kind of tailor the treatment to where the child is at, developmentally, but then also, like we had mentioned, taking this, learning how to take pills. So for my 9-year-old, he literally just learned a couple months ago. I have some parents who are able to do it with 6-year-olds. I think a lot of it is kind of just the kid and that buildup. I think it's like a big thing. Like they try to swallow something, it gets stuck in their throat, and then they get a little bit of anxiety. So my trick is to start off with homeopathic tablets because those are sugar and it will dissolve in their throat if it gets stuck, and you can get little tiny, tiny ones. So not the little tiny round pellets where you usually take like 5 of those that often come in like a little tiny tube, but just a little bit bigger than that. There are little, like Highland is one of the manufacturers, and literally you could use the ones for anything. I actually used the leftover ones for my daughter's teething. And it was funny. My son is like, "Why are we doing that?" I'm like, "Just because it's easy and I have them in the house." But yeah, started off doing one of those little tiny pills, and he's like, "Oh, I can do this." And then we got it up to 5 because 5 is about the size of the smallest. And I start off with gel caps because, again, that's going to go down easier. They're tinier than even the smallest capsules. They just are easier for kids to take. So we started off with the tiny homeopathics, then we got up to kind of like small tablet homeopathics again because it's, a sugar pill and it will essentially dissolve if it gets stuck. And it reduces the anxiety. I've had people say that they use candy. I'm not a huge fan of that for lots of reasons.
Yeah.
But
Especially when
still,
it's 3 times a day.
yes, and it's big. They're big. Most candy is big. So we start off with the homeopathics. Then I usually go to, so for my son, we were doing working on his gut. And so a lot of the manufacturers will make small, gel caps of things like oil of oregano or thyme or, undecylomic acid for candida. So there's a lot, you can get smaller ones. So we graduated up to those. We stuck with those for a couple months. And my son was like, "I think I'm ready to try something bigger." So then we moved on to bigger gel caps and then smaller capsules. And, to this day, he is way too, he thinks about it too much when he's doing it. But he can do it now, and every once in a while it'll get stuck, but not very often. And when it gets stuck, he doesn't freak out anymore like he used to because he's like, "I know I can get it to go down." So a lot of it, another big mistake I see people make with kids is like they'll tell the kid to put their head up, like when they swallow, do not do that, because when you do that, you close off the throat and it gets stuck. So keeping your head at a neutral position is key, super duper important. And just, follow your kids' cues. They're going to let you know what they can handle and what they can't, and the pace at which you can do it. And then, like I said, of working with like the trauma related stuff, I've kind of incorporated that stuff into it too to make it easier. But like I said, doing the homeopathic kind of sugar pills and then moving into soft gels is a really nice transition for kids because I haven't met many kids that can just, pop a giant capsule into their mouth and swallow it.
Yeah, it's really about like titrating it over time slowly. What are your views of opening and dumping them in smoothies and drinks like that?
I do that a lot with my little ones. Certain supplements, that's not going to work for, because you need to actually have the delivery to the gut. And in those cases, we actually will use like different forms, or you can get some that actually have enteric coating on the actual supplement. So it actually does make it through the digestive tract. But yeah, that's a lot of that. I will have parents open a lot of them, but only the ones that, you really can. And some of them just don't taste good. And you're going to lose your kids when they don't taste good. So that literally there are whole categories of supplements I won't use in kids because the taste is so bad. And the kids are like, "I'm not going to do this."
Yeah, and that's why it's so important to kind of work with someone who works with children and understands the whole process. You cannot go to someone who works only with adults. They don't understand the
They don't.
nuances of kids. And one thing that you kept saying, and it just kept coming to me, because I've worked with kids that have sensory issues, and
Yes.
taking a capsule can be the hardest, darnest thing parents have done is, but, and it doesn't, and it's irrespective of age, right? It's something
Oh,
that's so
absolutely, with
important to
those sensory
understand
kiddos.
and make it okay for parents to realize that even if they're over 10 years old, it's okay. It's a process and it's something that every kid will have to get to themselves. But yeah, like it's so hard and it's so personalized, and you have to kind of work with a practitioner who understands how to work with children, but then also who works with those special cases as well, of how
Oh,
to reduce
absolutely.
anxiety of parents.
It is huge. Like, and that's something that I think is so important, is the individualization and not to compare yourself. The other day, a friend of mine who's also a practitioner put up on Facebook, what's the most valuable piece of advice you've ever had? And it was not to compare myself to other people, because everyone's journey is going to be different, and that's the same for your kids. And it's funny, because I get the questions all the time, even though we talk about it in appointments. The patients are and parents are always like, how long is this going to take? And I'm like, unfortunately, I don't have a crystal ball, so I can't predict that, because truthfully, there are a handful of people who start doing all the stuff and they're like amazing, but most of us, the vast majority of us, it takes a longer period of time for our bodies and our brains to assimilate everything that's happening. And so it's the funniest thing ever too, because like, I have been working on my hormones pretty hard, and I started taking stuff, and I've been doing it for like 3 weeks, and I was like, why is nothing happening?
And you're like, I get
Wait,
it.
yes, we all fall victim to that, wanting things now. And I feel like that's another topic too, but like, everything in society pushes you to want things immediately. But I think it's actually sometimes a blessing in disguise to go through these things, because you learn on the other end. You can have patience. You can accomplish hard things. You learn things. I think I always tell people, remember, doctor means teacher in Latin. That's what I'm doing with you. I'm teaching you things and giving you tools for you and your kids, so that you can have, a better life and better outcomes in the end. And that's something else I tell my patients. It's like, once we go through all this, you have those treatment plans, you have these tools, go back to them and you start seeing things happen again. And by and large, a lot of my patients will, come like email me and just be like, oh my God, I started doing this stuff again. And we're better now. And it's cool to watch that too. And don't get me wrong, every once in a while they have to come back for other things. I will say, life and stress, especially the pandemic, got in the way, and I ended up seeing a whole lot of people that I hadn't seen in a long time, because so many things, there were so many things going on then. But it's like, and it's funny, because a lot of them said, I started doing what we used to do, and it didn't work quite the same as it has in the past. And I honestly feel like that was, kind of a unique period of time, and we're still kind of dealing with that, grappling with all of the emotions and everything that happened during that period of time. I had so many people who are like, I'm not an anxious person at all, but I feel anxiety now, or I feel depressed now. And it was, that I don't think it brought out the best in everyone, but I think it did highlight the need for addressing, things like we're talking about, mental health, the gut brain axis, and taking care of our bodies, to prevent, that type of stuff and happening, it to, in the future, or even now.
I think one of the best things that most people that I come across has just been to slow down, right? Because we are constantly running at a mile a minute, and it really allowed us all to stop and slow down and make connections with our children. I think that is one thing that I saw a lot with parents, was just they're saying, oh, we never saw our kids doing X, Y, and Z before. Like, we didn't see them play or do these things. And it's because a lot of times those kids were either in school or a parent were away. And so it allowed those connections within families to happen as well. And I think that where there were harder things, there were also things that we need to learn and kind of continue. right? We did those,
absolutely.
and we need to continue those. And those in where stress was really high, those kinds of things were rewarding and helping bring that stress level down. And so it's just kind of, you know, constantly checking back in with us and with our bodies to see where we're at.
Absolutely. No, I agree 100%. I think while the pandemic was hard, I think there are a lot of important lessons that we've gotten out of it. And that I think it was just being present with yourself and your kids. And that's something that we did. We slowed down a lot and we changed a lot of things, and that has stuck with us. You know, I was told, you know, I kind of said that at the beginning of the pandemic. I remember saying to my husband, I was kind of like, you know, I kind of feel like this is the universe telling us all, you know, whoa there, slow down. You know, I could all need it, especially those of us in Western countries, you know, like you said, we're fast paced, go, go, go. And, you know, we humans weren't designed to live like that.
Yeah. I think that's such a great way to just kind of, you know, refocus and pause. We've had such a nourishing conversation, I think, for parents. There's been so much information in there. It's just to stop, to slow down, to allow healing to happen. You know, it's just checking in with your kids. Like we said right at the beginning of it, just bring them closer, hug them tighter with intention, right? And so bringing that intention into a lot of the things that we do with our families. I can't thank you enough for all of this information. I think that the families are so lucky and blessed to have you come in and share all this information with them.
No problem. I mean, that, like I said, I'm super excited to talk today because, yeah, our kids, you know, I feel like our kids are our most important, you know, just, I know they always say resource there. I mean, they're our future. They are, you know, part of us. And like, yeah, I feel like we put societally, we should put more effort into our kids. You know, I feel like getting ready to vote right now, all the stuff that matters to me. I mean, it was like putting money into my kids' school system. I'm like, yeah, we need to do this. We need to, you know, show up for them and show that we care, you know, all of this stuff all the time.
Yeah. And I think we're just blessed to have people like you who are there to help support parents when it comes to their kids' health, because that really is their future, right? It's everything. Yeah. If you've got their health, you've got everything. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I loved our talk. It was great.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation today. Thank you for listening to this podcast and spending your precious time with us at Helping Children Thrive. If you find this podcast helpful, please share it with your family, friends, and others who may benefit. If you haven't already, hit subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. Please take a few moments to rate and review this podcast on the review section of Apple Podcasts. This will help other parents, caregivers, and professionals find the show more easily. Visit MominaSaleemCoaching.com to post comments on today's show or ask any questions about upcoming episodes. And sign up to receive a weekly update. Helping Children Thrive is not a substitute for working with a qualified healthcare professional. The information shared here is not intended to diagnose and treat your child. Before implementing anything discussed here on the podcast, make sure to consult your healthcare practitioner. See you all next week.